You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program to put some money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing as we pick up the pieces following a pretty, run-of-the-mill weekend for the most part as the dog days have arrived, literally and figuratively. We'll get to that in a couple of moments' time. Steve Merrill will step up and in and join us. We'll talk some college basketball. We're going to talk some political props. As there was an interesting story over the weekend as far as it being the dog days of winter, so to speak. And the fact that it's post-election hasn't stopped the political props and the action, as Donald Trump's that entertaining. Like, you know, you figured that the Trump mania would sort of go away after he won the presidency. No, it hasn't. The craziness has continued and the betting has continued. So there's a ton of numbers out there. We're going to break them down a little bit. Steve Merrill will talk Trump props. Will he get impeached? Will he resign? All kinds of crazy stuff. We'll talk some college basketball. We're going to talk NBA basketball. We're going to get serious with Coach Nick. Coach Nick, bballbreakdown.com. Coach Nick, one of my favorite guests. We're going to run the gauntlet. We've got a track meet expected tonight, man. Golden State and Denver, the total is up to 240 points right now. We've got our first deal, the trade deadline. I'm less than 2 weeks away right now, International Basketball Association, and could be a pretty active one, actually. Mason Plumlee traded from Portland to Denver, so we'll break down that deal. There's a lot of rumors as far as Serge Ibaka is concerned, as the Orlando Magic are going to be sellers. They're not going to the playoffs. They know it. They're going to be sellers. The Toronto Raptors. Raptors have lost 10 of their last 14 basketball games. And a couple of weeks ago, they were saying, no, it's not time to panic. Kyle Lowry says, I'm not panicking, but I'm starting to worry. And Kyle Lowry goes off last night after the game. Who is he calling out? We'll break that down as well. We're going to talk some NBA from a DFS perspective. The Tony Cincata steps up and in and joins us. So we've got some great guests on the program. A lot of basketball talk, a little Trump prop talk. You think he's going to get impeached? There could be some money there. And hey, if you don't, if you think he's going to make America great again and he's not going to get impeached, then there's some money on that as well. So as I stated, the dog days of winter have officially arrived, literally and figuratively. So it's now 1 week removed from Tom Brady and the New England Patriots' epic comeback in Super Bowl 51. There was a Super Bowl hangover, a couple of days of talking about the shocking collapse of the Atlanta Falcons, yet reality is starting to settle in right now. It's the dog days. And to symbolize the dog days, it's the Westminster Kennel Dog Show. And whenever you know, that whenever it's the time of the year that it's the dog show, you know, it's like, yeah, all right. You know, it's the calm before the storm. As the Westminster Kennel Dog Show starts tonight at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. And I don't know, man, insert Dolan joke here. You know, I guess these dogs probably do a better job running the Nick organization than the clowns that are running the organization right now. But that's besides the point. But it's kind of amusing somehow that that the dog show begins tonight after the circus just left town with the Knicks homestead coming to an end. But they actually won. They actually beat the Spurs, who I think are way overrated, actually. Spurs might be like the worst team ever to win 40-plus games at this juncture of the season somehow. Either that or I just get screwed all the time when I bet on them. But that's besides the point. So it's a week after the Super Bowl right now. March Madness? Nah. March Madness is really like late March, all right? It's really like late March, early April. And to put it in perspective, you know, the national championship game is going to be right around the same time that the Major League Baseball season starts. Now, pitchers and catchers are set to report right now, but even Pete Rose doesn't really bet on preseason baseball all that much. Hell, even I don't bet on preseason baseball all that much. But if you do, there is money to be made, but it's sort of like going to the casino when you're hammered. There's not a lot of method to the madness. It's really like ride the hot hand. And I've said it a million times. If you go to a casino and you're at the roulette wheel and you see it's come up black seven times in a row, don't be the idiot that says, oh, it can't happen again. Ride the freaking wave, all right? Ride the wave, and that's what you got to do when it comes to the preseason. NBA's been a pretty entertaining season this year. Everybody hates each other. There's a lot of intensity. The playoffs are going to be off the hook. But it's All-Star Week this week. And the players have kind of hit a wall. The NHL continues, but nobody really cares about the National Hockey League until the playoffs start. So we really are in, like, nowhere's land right now. But the fact of the matter is, we might be 1 week removed from the Super Bowl, but championships are won and lost at this time of the year, all right? Tom Brady got it done on the field, but without all the great draft picks, the New England Patriots aren't there. Without all the great draft picks, the Atlanta Falcons had four freaking rookies starting on their defense in the Super Bowl. They're not in the Super Bowl. You know, Johnny Sixpack pays attention while he pounds the brewskis and the chicken wings down on Sundays in the fall. But the fact of the matter is, championships are won and lost right now in February, in March, in April. It's all about the draft. So while it is the dog days technically right now, the fact of the matter is the National Football League is a 365-day-a-year operation, and championships are won and lost, like right now. And the combine is a couple of weeks away. The draft is rapidly approaching. So, dog days, yes, but on the plus side, if you're going to bet on the Westminster Kennel Dog Show, take a terrier. They've won 22 times, best in show. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, we got a great show lined up. A lot of basketball talk. We got some DFS talk. I've got my DraftKings lineup for you a little bit later on. Tony Cincata is going to join us on the program. Coach Nick, B-Ball Breakdown, is going to join us. We're going to talk about the Serge Ibaka rumors. Where is he a good fit? The Toronto Raptors are reportedly interested in Serge Ibaka. There's also a late-breaking rumor right now. The trade deadline's on the 23rd, so it is rapidly approaching. The Denver Nuggets are going to trade Gallinari, and the Raptors are very interested in Gallinari. Gallinari would be a perfect fit for what the Raptors are looking for. We're going to break that down with Coach Nick. We'll take a look at a couple of the NBA games on the board tonight. We got Oklahoma City at Washington. Golden State is in Denver. We got an interesting game with the Clippers and the Utah Jazz. I got a pick for that game a little bit later on. But let's start off by bringing in Steve Merrill. We'll talk some college basketball, some Donald Trump, and more. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, Gabe. How you doing?
I've been better, Steve, I guess. But any day above ground is a good day, right? You know?
As long as your heart rate is staying in that safe zone, that's all I care about.
Yeah, I don't know if my heart rate's in a safe zone, but it's still beating.
It's a safe zone.
If there's anything safe about my life, Steve, but that's besides the point. So, you know, Steve, symbolically, man, whenever it's the Westminster Kennel Dog Show, you know what time of the year it is. It's the dog days of winter.
And, it's February.
Yeah, it's February, and it's sort of like that, the post-All-Star game. You got that WNBA game on the board, and it's sort of like, well, you know, everything that I ignore in my life for 362 days, I guess I'll pay attention to this today, but we're sort of in that nowhere's land right now. I mean, there's games every night, but, you know, the intensity factors and everything, it really is the dog days of winter right now.
Yeah, the week after the Super Bowl, we have this one-month layoff now until March Madness when everything gets excited again. Same thing happens after the NBA Finals. In late June and July, we have that one-month layoff until the NFL begins. And guess what, Gabe? The two best runs I've had maybe my entire career happened last year in those two times. This exact point last year, I went on a 21-3 basketball run in mid-February. And then last year, the day after the NBA Finals, I started a 19-0 baseball run that went into mid-July. So don't let anybody tell you can't make some serious money right now in these quiet times.
I like the optimism. I like the optimism there, Steve. And, you know, you're right. I usually do very well, you know, with the conference tournaments and the week leading up to the conference tournaments. We're starting to get there, but it is the calm before the storm. I don't bet the Westminster Kennel Dog Show because I don't understand it. It takes too long. If it was nice, you know, quick and simple, I totally get it. But there are odds out there, Steve, and I like this. Just because we're hardcore, I see the Terriers have won 22 times, best in show. Most of any breed. 14 Wild Fox Terriers and 8 Scottish Terriers. So it's sort of like a beauty pageant. If you're blindly betting it, just take Miss Venezuela.
Yeah, and I think the Terriers are usually some of the smarter dogs, so I guess that correlates. I know a hound dog won it a few years ago, which was big news out here on the East Coast, because literally like thousands of hound dogs were rescued. Because what happens, it's a really interesting phenomenon, whoever wins this, whatever breed wins this, becomes like the it dog for the next year or so. And it's the best thing in the world for like homeless dogs or shelter dogs. And it normally is Terrier, so I'm kind of rooting for an off-breed this year to help out, you know, for that reason.
I see, Scottish Terrier. Yeah, well, good job, boys, in the booth there. Wow.
Well, I knew they'd have it. They had the Puppy Bowl video, so you know, I'm surprised they don't have some video, actually.
That's some hardcore stuff. Yeah, we're on top of the dogs here, evidently.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the animal kingdom nailed. I mean, we just parlay that into some horse racing and greyhound racing. I mean, why aren't we doing greyhound fantasy right now, huh?
That's a good point. I bet the dogs before.
I've done horses. I've done High Line, but I've actually never been to a dog track. High Line's the most corrupt thing on earth. There we go. And the thing about High Line, I've told you this story before. I went to one about two decades ago, and on the program, it had like 100 players, and there's an asterisk next to like 10 of them. And I looked down at the bottom, it says denotes American citizen. It was down in Miami, I swear to you. It was the most bizarre program I've ever seen. And now, you know, we in modern times, that translates into our Trump segment, I guess.
That's funny, because Cam was talking about how fixed High Line was the other day as well.
It's incredibly fixed, yeah. Horse racing can be fixed, but it's hard for the horses to talk to each other in the back room before the event. Whereas these two guys go head to head, and one of them will just drop the pelota from his cesta whenever it's convenient. It's very shady.
Well, anybody that watched UFC 208 will wonder will wonder what the hell happened. And for the record, I don't think it was fixed. I think just the judges are really, really stupid, or owe the mob a lot of money. Nevertheless, what was that from the booth? Both, yeah, yeah. Like, Steve, it was bad, man. Like, it was bad. Like Monday Night Raw bad type of deal. Like, I remember I bet money on WrestleMania. I usually sprinkle every year. But a couple of years ago, Steve, I actually put, like, $150 a match and stuff like that. Like, real money, you know what I mean? So I bet, like, $200 on a match. And it says, you know, results are what WWE.com says they are. So it's not really what happens in the ring, Steve, right? So I forget who was wrestling. I'm sure the guys in the booth will remember. Shawn Michaels. I hate that guy, too. I've always hated him. I once heckled him, chanted Syracuse at him. He got his neck broken in Syracuse once by a bunch of guys in a bar. Me and my buddies were chanting, Syracuse. He doesn't like me either, I don't think. But Shawn Michaels was the guest referee. And the wrestler I bet on won the damn match. But Shawn Michaels said, no, it wasn't fair. We need to go on. And I got screwed. But I actually got up and, like, was fist pump. I was like, yeah, man, that's $150, WrestleMania. And then Shawn Michaels, he announces the match continues. I'm like, what a screw job, man. And, you know, it says all results WWE. It's worse than this, Steve. You watch a UFC fight, a guy outlanded a guy 118-54, and he lost somehow.
Yeah, here's what I want to ask you, Gabe, because I know you're into the MMA. They've got all this computerized scoring. Like you just said, he outlanded him by 100 and some punches. They know that instantly. Why don't they come up with a technical grading system? It takes all the subjectivity out of it.
Nah, because they like it the way that it is.
Well, they like the controversy, but it's ridiculous. When three judges are sitting next to each other watching the exact same fight, and I've seen this over and over again, you'll have one judge go 30-27 and the other two judges go 29-28 for the other fighter. I mean, that's not even close. How could that possibly be when you're watching the same fight? And I've seen that happen before.
Oh, it happened multiple times the other night. Like, they got to ban Brooklyn, all right? Don't go back to New York. It was, oh, we got to go to New York. Yeah, good job going to New York. Like, yeah, most fixed state in the world after, like, Louisiana. But anyways, all right, Steve. So speaking of states and fixed and everything, pretty interesting 3 weeks for Donald Trump. Like, I read a story yesterday, actually. Somebody tweeted it out, but it was interesting. It was the sports book, Steve. And they were talking about how Donald Trump props and political props have never been so popular ever. And they sort of thought that, like, you know, the election was the most bet election ever. And they thought, well, after the election, it'll die down. It hasn't. Like, people are betting, like, these Trump props every day. Trump still dominates television right now. We're living in a weird era right now. Like, he's affecting ratings of TV networks and stuff. Like, people, you know, Sean Spicer's hilarious briefings every day. Steve, they're getting 4 million people. His briefing, press briefings, are beating real soap operas and stuff. Nobody watches White House press briefings, but they do because they're so comically, like, insane. So people are watching it. So the betting market's a vibrant one. All the sportsbook directors are saying it's crazy, man. People are just, like, betting Trump stuff every day.
Yeah, but it's like anything. When you get a lot of public action, you get a lot of square action. And I'm telling you right now, you know, we talked about some of these props yesterday. The ones, you know, will he be impeached or whatnot? There's no way any of this stuff is happening. I understand the government system pretty well. And it's very difficult to impeach somebody, especially when the majority party is in both the Senate and the House.
That's the problem. So it could take 2 years.
None of this is happening. In fact, if you look at the international betting markets, which are the sharpest, although they had Hillary at 83%, so I guess sharpest would be in quotes. They had Brexit at 83% also last year. But right now, Trump is at 35% to win the 2020 election, not just to be president for the next 4 years, but he's got a 35% chance of being the president for another 8 years. So the fact that he's going to be gone in the next year or 6 months is ridiculous, and the odds should be about 100 to 1 that that happens. So this is a typical example, I think, of the public overreacting to the hype and hyperbole of the media. But I'll tell you what, Gabe, I called this. I said a year ago, I said, I don't know if he'll be a good president or not if he wins, but it'll be entertaining one way or the other, and that's exactly the case.
Well, I have to agree with you in a sense that I'll disagree in the sense that I think he could be impeached. And I'm going to be, I'd call it, you know, 50-50 that he makes it 4 years.
I mean, let me ask you something. Does impeach? Bill Clinton was impeached. So does that count? People forget Bill Clinton was technically, he was impeached.
Yes. He didn't have to leave. Impeached doesn't mean getting booted out.
Yes, that's a big, I mean, so yeah.
That's a good point.
That's basically just a technical vote. But there again, they don't have enough numbers right now, unless the Republicans. But then again, if he does something to get impeached, the Republicans will turn on him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And look, it's already coming out right now. His national security advisor was sending encrypted text messages to the Russians during the election. And why was he doing that? He was doing that to avoid the NSA spying on him. And that's why he's nailed. Like, the whole thing's a mess. But it's a good point. Because if people say, oh, he's going to get impeached, means he's going to get booted out. Bill Clinton got impeached, but he got through it.
And so did, I believe, Andrew Johnson. Nixon, of course, you know, resigned. But
yeah.
I think there was another one years ago. I think it was Andrew Johnson back in the 1800s. There's been two other presidents that have been impeached, but no one else other. Nixon's the only one that ever resigned. So there's a big difference between those two terms.
Right, these guys are on top of things. They can't tell me a point spread right away, but somehow Warman in the booths, like, he was Clinton was impeached by the House, but saved by the Senate.
Correct.
All right, so you're right about this. I think Trump could get impeached, but +150 is not a hell of a lot of value for something you have to wait for. And you know, not
plus
enough.
So they're not letting you take the no on these, correct?
Okay, I mean, there's more specific. Will he be found guilty during impeachment process? +515.
Definitely.
So, all right, will Donald Trump resign? +350.
I'm sorry, Gabe. The only reason there's something there is he's 70 years old. He's the oldest president ever. He's older than Reagan, even, who was the oldest before this. So he'll be 74 when the term is over. Health could become an issue. Pence is kind of the rising star. There could be something there, even if he's not doing a terrible job, just because of the age and the health and the fact that Pence is kind of everyone's next, you know, choice.
Yeah, not to mention, he didn't really want to win in the first place. So this is the interesting one. That people are talking about. Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. We're getting hardcore here right now. Section 4 of the 25th Amendment basically states that government could decide to remove someone if they think they're insane or unstable. But the Democrats would have to win in the midterms here in the, to get into that power. That's a long shot. So how about this one, Steve? None of the above happens. Trump runs the table. Everybody loves him. He makes America great again. +125.
That is a fantastic bet. The odds are, the odds are 70. The odds are 85% that that happens. I'm just telling you, and this isn't a partisan thing one way or the other. It's just a factual thing. I know the government works. He's not. It's just not going to happen. The problem is you're going to top your money for 4 months on a silly. I mean, for 4 years, it's just not worth it.
No.
But yeah, you're getting a plus money return on something that I think has a 10 to 15% chance of happening. So, you know, but then again, you compound that over a 4 year period, it's probably still not a good bet for that reason.
Well, they got to start because you're right. They want to keep the Trump backers interested in this. going to come up with some daily props. Over-under lies in a day. how much is, like, the Mexico wall going to cost? Over-under $20 billion. You know what I mean? You gotta start, you know, they got to start thinking and come up with some daily props. What's the next country that he will insult or hang up on? You got to come up with some different stuff. But I agree, not enough value for these props. But... Yeah, and especially the British books and the Irish books. They say that the people love betting this stuff. All right, Steve, we got about 3 minutes here, and we got three college basketball games: Louisville and Syracuse. Syracuse are actually playing better than people realize. They've been good at home. They were on a 5-game win streak. They lost at Pittsburgh on Saturday. They're 8-4 in ACC play. 8-5 in ACC play. Louisville are 8-4. Syracuse, also, another thing people don't think of is scoring, but they've been an over machine, man. 8-0-1 to the over in their last 10 games, Steve.
Yeah, one thing I like to look at for these new matchups from teams that haven't been in the conference for a long time is I think home court often holds more edge than normal because teams aren't used to traveling there every year, and that's held up so far in this series. They've played twice the last 2 years. Syracuse won by 10 here as a home dog 2 years ago. Louisville won by 14 at home last year. So if that holds up again, Syracuse might have the edge.
Very good point. Home team is 7-2 against the spread last 9 in this series. West Virginia and Kansas, I remember this game about a month ago. It was on a Monday night. We talked about it. Kansas, they were ranked number 1. They only had 1 loss on the season. They were getting points. They went in there and they got blasted by West Virginia. They lost by 16. Revenge spot here. But Kansas have not been a good ATS team this year.
No, I actually had a best bet on West Virginia for my clients a few weeks ago on that Tuesday night game. I had several of them say, "You're crazy. How can you be laying points against the number one team?" As you said, West Virginia won easily by 16. I went against Kansas again this past Saturday with Texas Tech. They covered as a home dog, losing by just a point as a 5-point home dog. So I've been going against Kansas quite often, but this actually looks like a decent spot tonight at home with revenge.
All right, Steve, we got to get out of here. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us saying that Donald Trump was going to run the table. No problems for Trump. Plus 125. Coach Nick joins us next. All right, let's talk some NBA basketball. Let's bring in Coach Nick, B-ball breakdown. .com. Always a pleasure talking hoops with Nick. I always look forward to the coach joining us. And there's a ton of stuff going on in the association. Crazy stuff with Westbrook and Durant the other night, man. Westbrook hung 47 on the board, but wasn't nearly enough. It was funny. Last week, Durant was like, "There's no bad blood between us. It's all, he took the Trump route. He blamed the media. It's the media, you guys, you're creating a feud. There's no feud." Well, evidently Westbrook didn't get that memo, KD, because, you know, Westbrook was pretty freaking fired up the other night. So let's bring in Coach Nick. Ton of stuff to break down right now. B-ball breakdown style. Coach, always a pleasure. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I like how you represent with that jacket on.
Yeah, you know what? I've been worn this in a little while. I guess it's fitting since we will talk some Raptors. It's my Vegas jacket, Coach.
So nice, looks good.
Yeah, I like the zipper here. I can't lose my sports tickets. You know what I mean?
Really,
like, yeah, everything's in control up at top. You know, otherwise, too many drinks, stuff starts falling out of the pockets. Everything's in control up here. But I appreciate it. So, hey, trade deadline. Blazers move Mason Plumlee. Plumlee's playing pretty well this year. 11 points, 8 boards, but he's going to be looking for money next year. The Blazers don't have it, so they send him to Denver. And I guess he'll fit right in Denver because they don't play defense there, and he doesn't want to, and they won't ask him to.
Well, we've seen evidence of Plumlee being able to protect the rim every now and then, and I have a feeling that if you put him on the bench behind Jokic, he might actually, you know, improve his game rather than going against starters because he's a very good passer. So they won't lose much when he comes in for Jokic with the passing game they already have installed. So this might be a really good position for Plumlee to really help the Nuggets make a push and get a good playoff seed.
And as far as the Blazers are concerned, they're just racking up the first-round draft picks right now.
Yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot more moves, I have a feeling, and they probably will package one of those or more to continue to look at what they're going to do this year and not. So I would be surprised if we didn't see more fireworks there. And certainly, you know, Nurkic, you know, will he be happier with a change of scenery? Probably. He went from being a starter to almost a non-player to begin with. So I wouldn't blame him for being upset about that. But I don't know if he moves the needle that much for the Blazers this year.
Now, the Blazers are a two-man operation. It's Lillard and McCollum and everybody else. All right, so speaking of the trade deadline, a player that is going to be moved, and I don't like dealing on rumors. I'm not one of these speculation type of guys. I like breaking down a deal after it happens. But Tony Romo landing? Every day it's somewhere else, right? But as far as Serge Ibaka is concerned, the Magic are trading him. Like, they are going to trade him. So the question is, just where does he end up? The initial reports are that the Miami Heat are very interested and the Toronto Raptors are interested. There's a lot of pressure on the Raptors right now from the fan base, on the general manager, Masai Ujiri, to do something. They've lost 10 of their last 14 games. Kyle Lowry last night after they blew a 16-point lead to the Detroit Pistons. He said, I'm going to be professional about things, but I know what's going on here and it has to stop, but I'm not going to say anymore. I know you discussed this on your podcast. So first part, is Ibaka a good fit with the Raptors? And secondly, what's going on with the Raptors and how did you interpret Kyle Lowry's statement?
Well, when you look at what Ibaka is as a player, he's a guy that can play defense and block some shots. He's also a guy that can shoot above the break threes at an above average percentage. Any team would die to have a guy like that in their team. So he fits in well anywhere. And certainly the Raptors have needed a spot in their starting lineup in that position for all season long if they're not going to go with Patrick Patterson. So he fits in there perfectly. But it doesn't change the fundamental fact that Lowry was talking about, which is that the offense gets torpedoed by DeMar DeRozan way too often with his isolations. And I think he's calling out Casey for not saying anything and not doing that whole coaching thing in the film room, and I'm not sure it would even change anything if he did, because it's sort of what they're doing and what they're about, but it's bad. They've lost 10 of 14, and I don't know if they're going to turn this thing around before it's too late.
When you watch the team, is that what catches your eye? Is the ball dying too much? Is there not enough movement? A lot of people sort of focus and say they don't have enough rim protection. They're not physical enough in the paint. They need another big man. Is it that they're playing too much isolation, the ball isn't being spread out around? And would it be the case he's doing this because he's thinking, well, I don't have anybody else that's going to be able to score for me?
They have pieces. Pat Patterson and Ross, those guys are good complementary pieces. The thing you have to worry about with isolation players who take, you know, tough shots or bad shots, the way you want to say it, is that, you know, when they don't work, I mean, it's great when they're hitting and everyone's happy. Melo is a good example of that. But when they don't work and you go on a streak, all of a sudden your teammates are really getting frustrated. And over a 14-game span of frustration, I know he didn't play in seven of those, but still, it becomes a problem in the locker room. That's what we're seeing. So if that doesn't change there, then, you know, maybe they should just trade DeRozan while he's at the height of his value.
You know what I find interesting, though, is that Kyle Lowry and DeRozan are extremely close. And, you know, not all teammates and even superstars on teams are generally going to be close, you know, just because they've been together for a while, per se. But they actually are. So I find it interesting that Kyle goes public with this instead of just privately telling DeMar to his face.
Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook were close as well for all those years.
Yeah, I guess, you know. Kyle Lowry, though, also is known as someone that is kind of difficult at times. Do you think Kyle was right to be doing this?
You know, I think he was pretty good. I don't think he went too far, and, you know, and they got him after the game where he's frustrated. So I think it was fine. And I have suspect that there are going to be a lot louder words spoken behind doors, and, you know, to get something to happen. So he's right. Damari Carroll also said something similar, and he's right as well, having played for the Hawks and seen how it works when the ball really moves. And it does move at times when DeRozan's not in there, and Lowry is. So we've seen evidence, and that's probably what Lowry is also talking about. He's like, look, when you're not in and you're injured, we're moving the ball much better, getting better shots. You got to look at this and get on the board, or else we're going to have a serious problem, and that's where they are.
We all remember what we've seen last the most, and what we've seen last the most right now is the Washington Wizards just go on an absolute freaking tear. best record in the NBA in the month of February. If you go back to like mid-January, I think it's the second best record after the Warriors. Everything's starting to sort of come together for them right now. Are you buying in? Because, you know, we talk about the Raptors and a lot of people looked at them and had expectations that, you know, they can make it to the Eastern Conference Finals again and give the Cavaliers all that they can handle maybe again. I'm looking at this Washington team as a dangerous team. I mean, they have the star players, but I like the chemistry as well. They seem to have good chemistry on the floor. They all seem to sort of understand their roles. I think Scott Brooks is doing a great job. They get Oklahoma City tonight, the team that he used to coach, actually. Are you buying into the Wizards? What's your take?
I'm all in on the Wizards, and I think that they're better than the Celtics, and they're the best team that could compete with the Cavaliers in the playoff series because they have the star in John Wall. Their pieces are fitting together really nicely now, and it's the irony is that their offense is has a lot of motion and cleverness, and it's from a coach who never displayed that when he was at OKC. So either he got out of the shadow of Russ and KD and was able to do what he really wanted to do, or his sabbatical for a year just opened up his eyes to a new kind of offense. I don't know, but I am all in. I love the way the Wizards play. And you know who would look really good in a Wizards uniform is Serge Ibaka. And I think that if they could figure out a way to get Morris and maybe like Jason Smith package in a deal for Ibaka, that would be really scary. And that would have LeBron complaining a lot more to the press about needing some more guys off the bench for him.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking Ibaka would look good in the uniform he used to be in, too, in Oklahoma City. I'm sure Westbrook's thinking, hey, if he's available, why don't we just bring him back here? Because I just scored 47 the other night. And we still lost by double digits.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't forget he had a triple-double, but with the turnovers. So that's his Achilles heel, and Russ can do a lot of damage negatively to OKC as well with all that usage.
All right, so speaking of triple-doubles, how about this one? How about Draymond Green's triple-double the other night against Memphis? Put up a triple-double the other night versus the Grizzlies on Friday night. It was the night before they played the big game against the Warriors, but he only scored 4 points. So a lot of people, you're scratching your head. 4 points. What were the numbers? 12 rebounds, 10 assists, 10 steals.
Right.
Like, how is that even possible? Oh, yeah, he also had 4 block shots. It's the first time ever in NBA history that someone's had a triple-double without scoring at least 10 points. Alvin Robertson actually had a quadruple-double in 1986. Before that, it was only like, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon and David Robinson type performances. But Draymond Green, such a unique and interesting player, isn't he? And I've been saying it for years, man. It was evident last year when he wasn't there. He really is the most valuable player on that team. You know, if they're missing Durant for one night, so be it. They're missing Curry, okay. You're missing Thompson. He just does everything, is evident of this weird triple-double.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, he's been so good this year, and they've needed him to be this good because they don't have Bogut and the same infrastructure. And that said, Durant has also been terrific. So this notion that they didn't have rim protection or their defense would suffer is hogwash because they're number one in defensive rating, I believe, still. And Draymond Green is a playmaker. He literally just makes the play that they need him to make consistently across the board. If he's not going crazy on the bench and screaming and yelling, whatever, then he really just makes that team unbeatable. And you can put your money down now that there's no one's going to beat him in a playoff series.
Yeah, he's just the type of guy. He reminds me of like an elite street basketball player. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't play a position. He just does it all. Hey, I hit a three. Hey, I'm going to dunk on your ass.
Here's what I say, because of toughness as well. If there's a company picnic for the NBA in the summer and there's a pickup game going to get started and you get to pick who you want, I'll pick Draymond first. You can have anybody else out there, and good luck to you, but Draymond's going to be the first pick I make, and I know I'm going to hold court all afternoon.
I like where you're going. I like where you're going with that. And finally, in closing, you mentioned Kevin Durant. He's had, you know, the chip on his shoulder for a little while, actually, going back when he said, I'm tired of being a nice guy. I'm going to tell the media what I really think. That was a year or two, a year and a half ago, whatever. But the aggression has played out on the court a little bit. It's evident, as you mentioned, with the defense and the block shots. It's something that people don't really realize that Durant's bringing to the table, that it's a real pain in the ass to deal with this guy because he's so long. And he really is playing great freaking defense. Like, the block shots are just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. No question. And we saw that in the playoffs last year with the Thunder. And it was only a question of will he maintain that. Without question, he has. And he's making life miserable on that end, too. And so when you watch like them play the Cavaliers, there is no answer. The Cavaliers have no answer for Kevin Durant on both ends of the floor. And that's the reason why, you know, LeBron is getting his, you know, his underwear all bunched up, because they realize this. And they're seeing that over these two games, there's nothing they can do with him. And he just gives them an advantage. And if they can do that to Cleveland, they're doing it to anybody.
I think LeBron might have to dip into his own bank account, because Snyder's already way over the yeah. Hey, LeBron, all right, you pay them. You want to bring him in? You pay them, because it's amazing. I saw they lost $40 million last year. Yeah, we won the championship. We lost $40 million, but no one's feeling sorry for Quicken Loans right now, Coach.
Right.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Nick. It's all. I love talking hoops with you. Thanks for the time, man.
You got it, Gabe.
All right, there's Coach Nick with us. Sorry, we'll take a quick break. Tony Cincotta joins us. We talk NBA from a DFS perspective. All right, the dog days of winter might be here. The Westminster Kennel Dog Show taking place across the street from where Tony Cincotta joins us right now. Tony's not sure, though. Are those Nick players or dogs that are coming out of MSG? But we got an entertaining NBA card this evening, especially for you fantasy players. We got the Wizards and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And we have a total. I'm old enough. I remember when the NBA All-Star game totals were like 245 and stuff like that. Now we got regular season games. 240 points, the total tonight. The Nuggets and the Warriors. The Tony Cincotta joins us. What's up, Tony?
Everything's going well. You know what's crazy is that Nuggets-Warriors game. The Nuggets, Nikolai Jokic with the trade that involved the Jerkic this weekend. He expected some playing time. He just got to stay out of foul trouble. And tonight, I think he's going to pay off big time for fantasy owners.
Oh, you know what? We just got breaking news, actually. Klay Thompson out.
Oh.
Klay Thompson out joins the million Denver Nugget players that are out tonight. So, yeah, I know you had your eye on Klay Thompson. Thanks, Warman.
Yeah. But this makes Stephen Curry even a better play. More shots, more ball. And on DraftKings, Kevin Durant's under 10 grand. With that total, both those guys have to be in your lineup now.
It's a good point. Good point. And you know what? It's actually a benefit considering the NBA, man. I found out like 10 minutes before the game last week, Markieff Morris was getting rested. Thanks.
Yeah. We were doing a show when that happened. We had to change like 22 lineups while we're doing the show. And we're like, what the heck is going on here? But it ended up being okay.
I know. And I got people on Twitter, jackasses, calling me out too. Because I do the daily lineup. There's a video. Hey, Morris is out, idiot. It's like, yeah, I do that video earlier in the day, all right?
Yeah.
What do you want from me?
Like, I hate to say it. The people on Twitter, they like to be miserable. There's no happiness on Twitter. No happiness on Twitter.
Okay, so listen, as we mentioned, Klay Thompson's out. We got a total of 240 points tonight. Steph Curry, $10,000. Almost feels cheap for Curry tonight.
Yeah, I got to play them both. I think you got to start out your lineups now with Curry, Kevin Durant, and I'm going to try to get in Nikolai Jokic, but maybe he's less effective now with those two guys there. The only problem with Jokic is the foul trouble. There's no one there with an offensive game plan to get him in foul trouble tonight, because he won't cover Draymond Green. He'll go on Javale McGee, and that's no match. He doesn't even get the ball.
All right, John Wall, $10,500. I just talked a little bit about the Wizards' success with Coach Nick. At the betting windows, they're killing it, man. 18-1, their last 19 home games right now. They're just absolute monsters. Great team chemistry. And I've been praising John Wall for a while. I think they're in a good spot tonight, actually, against Oklahoma City. Coming off that emotional game on Saturday night against Golden State, could be harder for them to ramp it up. And Washington are just running up and down the court.
Washington is the best team in daily fantasy to predict. Predictability is there. They all play 37 minutes a game. They only go seven deep in their rotation. Russell Westbrook, not only is he a turnover machine, which will help John Wall get a few steals, he also is terrible defensively and sometimes forgets he's in the game. John Wall tonight, he's 2,200 less than Russell Westbrook. A way better play tonight for me than Russell Westbrook.
Otto Porter, has the price caught up to him at $6,400?
Yes. There's too many weapons there. He's the fourth or fifth choice. You can't pay $6,200 for the fourth or fifth choice in an offense. There'll be games where he's going to put up 30 fantasy points, and he's going to make you look stupid for not putting him in. Like, tonight's a great matchup to put him in. But when you're the fourth or fifth option, there's too much risk involved.
Yeah, and you know my issue is, too, he's usually in the same price range as Morris is.
Yeah.
And I'm getting rebounds with Morris. And Morris is hitting threes, and he's getting assists, right? There's just – you know, with Porter, you know, he's you got to hope that you got to hope that his bomb's away. But you're right; they're fantasy monsters, man. Like, you know who's their fantasy monsters light right now? The Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh, absolutely, because they're
Nick Stauskas. The guy's putting up sometimes 10 times. His cost. 7 times is like routine right now. And Darius Saric is another kid. He's putting up 7, 8, 9 times his cost.
See, what people don't realize is Nick Stauskas got moved to the bench, and now he's going against second units for the first time he's out in the court, and he's become the focal point of that offense. The same thing with Dario Saric. They play against the second units. They're the go-to guys when they're on the court with the second unit, and they're absolutely excelling. And guess what? They even stay with the first unit when we get to the fourth quarter and the game's on the line. So they're getting 30 minutes of time. Both these guys are underpriced. I like Saric tonight, and I love New Orleans Noel. He's in my lineup at power forward.
All right, Jermichael Green tonight. It seems like whenever somebody plays Brooklyn, that's the game, right? Like everyone's, because you look at it, though, and it's almost every position. I've got Mike Conley in my lineup tonight. How can't I?
Yeah.
You know, they give up 52 points on average to point guards. But you go down position by position, they get torched by point guards, and they also get torched by the center position as well. So a lot of people are going to want to have Gasol in there. But you're looking at Jermichael Green here, $4,700.
Here's the problem with Green. Splitting time with Zach Randolph. One of those guys go off each time. When they're both in a lineup together, I get worried about who goes off. And I actually lean to Zach Randolph in this one. Brooklyn has become the Colorado Rockies of daily fantasy basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as people go there, you have to put them in your lineup. The 30th in the league against so many positions. But Gasol, Conley should be staples tonight. I'm a little worried about Jermichael Green. I want to take a shot tonight with Chandler Parsons. He's been one of those guys. We've been waiting to get the playing time. $3,200. I think it's 20 fantasy points. That's 8 times your value.
You know what? I'll blast off my lineup quickly to you in a second here. But I was looking at Parsons because I needed two players in the mid-3,000 range, actually. I went with Stauskas at $3,800 and Monte Ellis, $3,500.
Yeah, Monte Ellis is a guy that's going to be heavily owned tonight. People like him in tonight's matchup for sure. He's a good play.
Yeah, you know, it's $3,500. For a player, listen, he's not the Ellis of yesteryear, but he's still taking 13, 14 shots a game, Tony.
He likes to, and Indiana plays up and down pace. I like this guy tonight. Monte Ellis is a guy that, you know, it's going to be hit or miss with him. But at that price, how does he not get 20 fantasy points?
Now, you can't afford every double-digit player here. But Anthony Davis, $11,000 against Phoenix tonight. Yeah, I like Phoenix, actually, in this game tonight, Tony. New Orleans in a tough spot, played late night last night against Sacramento, back-to-back on the road here tonight. But Davis is a machine.
Davis is a machine. I like Tyreke Evans in this game. He played 15 minutes last night. He was supposed to play 20, so I think he'll get 23 to 25 minutes tonight. I like in this game Anthony Davis, of course. And for Phoenix, Eric Bledsoe's price is underpriced. But coming off the injury, I just don't want to take the risk when I find other value out there tonight. But Bledsoe actually could be a good play for you.
Yeah, you know what? We were talking about so everybody picks on Brooklyn all the time. And I got to tell you, man, to me, Brook Lopez just flies under the radar because there is that perception. People are like, oh, they're terrible and they're the worst at this and they're the worst at that. They give up the most of this. But Brook Lopez also scores the most on their team.